Lake Effect continues now on WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Outbreaks in the meat industry are not new. In the early 90s, mad cow disease was a trade problem that affected the entire industry that halted the sale of beef worldwide. Then, a large outbreak of avian influenza in early 2013 was a pathogenic problem that led to the euthanization of thousands of birds. Coronavirus, however, is entirely different in that it affects the segments of the beef industry where there is a high concentration of people in small places where the opportunity of transmission is increased. Meat plants have workers, already in dangerous roles, at greater risk of getting COVID-19 standing elbow to elbow on the job. The outbreak of the disease in meat plants has caused a disruption in food supply and beef prices to rise. Despite President Trump using executive power to reopen plants, doing so puts managers in a tough position as almost 5,000 COVID-19 cases were reported at meat processing facilities across the nation. Dan Schaefer is an emeritus professor of animal sciences at UW-Madison, and he joins me to help shed light on the problems the beef industry faces today. He starts by explaining where Wisconsin companies fall under this dilemma.
They have competing interests. One interest is in to run their business. Another interest is to provide food for society. And a third interest is to take care of their workforce because they can't do either of the first two if they don't have a workforce.
This deals with the setup of the plants and where workers are. So can you explain the physical setup of the plants and how workers are spaced and used in production process that has contributed to the spread of coronavirus?
Well, many of the plants in the meat industry are not new. They were built, some parts of them were built 50 years ago. And then in some cases, remodeling has occurred and new additions have been made. So depending upon the physical space available in the building and the nature of the business to be conducted, obviously the plant management needs to decide how to conduct the process of in this case, harvesting animals and converting them to meat products. Obviously, they have to do all of this indoors because if they were to do any of these processes outdoors, the food production process would be subject to environmental contamination, which would raise food safety concerns. And it would increase spoilage of the food and reduce the shelf life of the food items, the meat items. And then it's a matter of fitting all the workers in line to do the array of steps involved in rendering the animal unconscious, removing the blood from the animal's body, and then step by step doing the disassembly process, resulting in the end in a raw material which then has to be chilled, where in the case of cattle, it is held for 24 and most commonly 48 hours. Then it's been chilled and it is now a less favorable habitat for microorganisms to proliferate on. And then it goes through a further disassembly process, resulting ultimately in a meat cut that's in a vacuum package, which goes into a box. And then that box goes into refrigerated storage or frozen storage if it's going to be long-term storage.
So during this process, what kind of protection gear do workers normally wear for each stage of the assembly process? And how long did it take for Wisconsin companies to actively start not just distributing, but requiring more PPE for their workers that was for coronavirus specifically and not their everyday wear?
Well, with regards to the normal PPE, of course, their principal concern is to prevent injuries. And that is the longstanding, well-established plant safety protocol that any of the processing plants have in place. What the coronavirus does is to raise a different kind of safety concern. And now we're talking about a disease that's transmitted through the air. So all of a sudden now the airspace around a worker and not simply the knife space, let's say, around a worker is important. First of all, the workers would, depending upon their job, they would be wearing something to protect themselves from injury by sharp objects. And they would also be garbed in white clothing, which is always used by food production people because it is able to be washed and dirt on the uniform can be observed. So all of that was done in the interest of to prevent microbiological or minimize microbiological contamination of food products. Now, in addition to this, there needs to be this sort of airspace consideration. And so ventilation comes into play in terms of air changes in the space. Of course, if one is blowing a lot of air through a space that is intended to be refrigerated, that certainly increases the demand on the refrigeration system. Then there's the proximity issue. And so I'm sure what they are all considering right now, there's been some guidance put out by CDC about plexiglass shields to prevent side-to-side contamination and then avoid working across the table from someone, or if workers will be across the table from one another, to put up some sort of plexiglass in between. But the challenge now is to spread workers out and accomplish all the same steps, but in more space. But there's a space constraint because it all has to fit within the available space, the available floor plan of the building. Maybe one can envision a worker who does more than one job in order to get all the jobs done by fewer workers. Or there's been some thought that the production system in the future, when the plants come back online, may be slower. But that might be a thought that simply reflects that they're short-staffed. It's a real dilemma. And so I would never want the public to think that plant management is inconsiderate of their labor force, because that is illogical. The work doesn't get done if you don't have people to do it, and the people that are doing those jobs don't want to come to work and take a risk of becoming sick or ill. So how does one get the work done while assuring your workforce, your employees, that they are going to be safe?
With companies trying to manage federal government guidelines and their own judgment and their own capabilities from building to building on what would be the best way to continue operations, how is this affecting the supply chain?
Yeah, the impact on the supply chain goes as follows. So in the beginning of this, when it began to express its effects on the food plants, on the meat plants, then of course there was the recognition that some in the workforce were positive. Well, then it didn't take long for the public health officials to pay attention to the fact that these meat processing plants, and for that matter, could be any other plant where workers are working close together, are hotspots. They're hotspots not because the plant themselves is the origin of the virus. It's because the workers who are out in their families, even if they're sheltering in place, through their own networks, they have the opportunity to pick up the virus. And if they're asymptomatic and they come to work, then it's in the plants. So then there's a flurry of positive cases. So then the plants, the workforce doesn't want to come to work. They'll call in sick, which they certainly should do. And the plant can't get its work done. It can't really ensure the safety. So they say, we got to stop here. We got to consider our situation. Sometimes there have even been outbreaks of the virus among management. I mean, nobody's immune to this, not anyone in the country. So the plant shuts down. Of course, they're going to clean the plant. And there's advisory guidance now in terms of sanitization chemistries that are effective against the virus. From my limited understanding of the sanitation chemistries, it's the same kind of chemistries that have been used all along to kill the bacterial problems in plants to ensure food safety. Then anyone who's in a leadership role faces this question, okay, well, we need to get back in operation. The president wants us to be back in the operation. In fact, he doesn't really need to tell us to operate. We want to operate, but how do we bring our workforce back in? And we know that in order to bring the workforce back in, we have to be able to ensure them that they will be safe. So ideally, one would like to be able to give them a vaccination, but we don't have a vaccine. So now one would like to test the workforce. That would be a big help. At least you would admit everyone into the plant who is negative. But when the workforce leaves the plant, they go back out into the community where we don't have a control on the virus. So now we're talking about a huge demand for testing capability. Well, we don't have that. So the risk continues. We can take temperatures of workforce. We can try to detect symptoms, but it's going to be an ongoing challenge. We're going to learn now when society comes back in motion just what the recurrence of infections will be.
Are you aware of Wisconsin plants that have temporarily shut down, are currently shut down, or are starting to implement these test point protocols, essentially, to try and make it a secure workplace?
Yep, you bet. So the JBS Packerland plant in Green Bay was shut down for a time. I saw a photo taken of American Foods Group in Green Bay, and they were testing workforce for symptoms before they entered the plant. Well, you can think of the plants within Wisconsin, but it's really not a statewide thing. It's a nationwide thing. And so one of the plants is owned by a nationwide company. There's a Smithfield plant in Cudahy that's been shut down for a couple of weeks. This is a national problem. This isn't just a state problem. Because the meat that's produced by the plants here in Wisconsin, it would be safe to assume that it goes all over the nation and it goes to our trading partners around the world.
This industry obviously relies on a lot of people to do repetitive, careful work in every step of this process. Do you think this situation will encourage more investment in any possible automation? And, you know, can any part of this really be automated safely?
The answer would be yes. There will be thought as to how to probably minimize the number of people or the number of jobs that are needed to be filled in order to get the work done. So automation will be on their minds. I mean, and it has been on their minds because even before the pandemic, repetitive motion injuries have been a concern of the industry. It's another example of where the pandemic will spur creativity for ways to get the job done while minimizing this new set of risks that's known to us now.
The average person eats around 106 pounds of red meat per year, you know, according to estimations. But with the virus affecting chain supply, raising meat prices, limiting meat availability, you know, what do you think are the long-term implications? Because, you know, we can obviously survive without red meat. What do you think will be the larger impact?
Given the absence of beef sales through food services and the surge in grocery store purchases, the thought is that total beef sales are still probably down about 10 or 15% from normal. I think that it will take a while for the market to find the new normal, but I don't really foresee that the appetite for meat will disappear. The sad thing in the present situation is that the animals that are harvest ready are having to be euthanized if there is not a place that will harvest and process them. So as you may have read, there was a pork plant in Worthington, Minnesota that opened up with a skeleton staff. And the purpose of that pork plant was simply going to be to euthanize pigs that are harvest ready, but they weren't going to be processing those pigs into pork. They were just going to be landfilling those pigs or in some way disposing of their bodies. And they were expecting that they would do about 13,000 pigs a day just for no value. Obviously, this is because our food system in the U.S. is a just-in-time food system. All of the animal biology is managed in a way so that the animal reaches a harvest-ready endpoint, which is determined by market preferences, which are influenced by consumer interests. So when we have a disruption because one-third of the harvest capacity is offline, for cattle, we have some opportunity for them to grow to heavier weights to backlog the cattle and leave them out on pasture now for summer for a longer period of time. So feedlot placements in the U.S. are down. Cattle that are in feedlots are being held on feed for a longer period of time. So when they do come to market, they will be heavier. There will be more beef on the market. Anyway, the consequence for those in the production sector is devastating because the cost of feeding animals for no additional value in the gain is very expensive. And it is emotionally draining for people who produce animals to see those animals not fulfill a purpose for humankind.
Right, which has been a big issue surrounding the meat industry. Do you think that this could create long-term changes for a more sustainable way to humanely raise and slaughter meat?
So locally produced food is certainly a viable means of food production. It is a more expensive means of food production. So those products cost more because there are not the economies of scale realized in those production systems. All along, if society is willing to pay more for food, many more options become available. But the U.S. society has paid 8 to 10% of their disposable or spent 8 to 10% of their disposable income on food, and that's been great because then there was all that other disposable income to spend on other things. Alternative means of food production, they're always in play. No one should ever think that the food production system is static. Alternatives get evaluated, and when certain alternatives have merit for mainstream food production, then they move into mainstream. The economy of scale influence on our society is widespread.
All right. Well, Dan Schaefer, thank you so much for joining us today and shedding some light on the topic.
My pleasure. I'm enthused to have society need to take an interest in where their food comes from.
Dan Schaefer is an emeritus professor of animal sciences at UW-Madison.